for the track, but I might just do it again just to get everyone up to speed. So basically, federal government introducing quotas that should ideally force the hand, maybe not force, but strongly direct streaming platforms like Netflix and Disney Plus into going, hey guys, produce some local content, give our local industry a bit of a shot in the arm. Now, Amanda, big question here. Why has the federal government introduced these quotas? Is it a long overdue thing, or have streaming platforms largely been catering to our appetite for local content already?
Well, I think the original aim for this legislation, and this has been going on since at least 2020, it really has been advocated for by the production sector. As for the streaming services, are they catering? Probably we wouldn't say they are. Different services have done a different, sort of varying amounts of local programming. I think, but it's also important to note that the commercial broadcasters have also largely stopped producing drama in Australia. And I think actually what the government's trying to do is trying to fix the problem with what the commercial broadcasters are doing by having quotas on streamers.
And this pushback that these bigger international streamers, as I say, Netflix and Disney, is the ball ultimately in their court? Like, the government can say, here's some regulations, we advise you to do this, but ultimately these streaming sites do have a lot of clout, a lot of sway. Is it ultimately up to their discretion? What sort of repercussions could the federal government even implement?
Well, the federal government can set rules for their operation in Australia. And so what that could mean is that the streaming services decide that it's no longer hospitable to operate in Australia, that the new rules will require them to not make enough money to warrant having the service be available here.
And as you've seen recently, I guess a lot of the bubble, so to speak, of a lot of these platforms, like especially Netflix, is starting to burst a bit. You've got talk about ads being placed in Netflix. You've got different subscription levels now. The infatuation of on-demand streaming might have waned a little bit as of recent times, Amanda?
I think what happened is that we stopped seeing the exceptional constant growth, right, at a global level. And so these services penetrated the U.S., constantly growing quarter by quarter. Then they went globally. And in early of last year, we saw the first time that the continued growth, we saw the end. And part of that is likely that there are more services in the marketplace. So I don't think we have the sense that these services are going anywhere, or at least, not all of them, but we probably have too many of the services, and it's time now for them to focus on, really being good businesses that are financially sustainable and that are doing something for consumers that consumers want if they're subscriber-funded, or they're doing things that are valuable for advertisers if they're advertiser-funded.
It's interesting how you bring up talking about dramas. Because from my, my average perspective, there's not a lot of great dramas on commercial networks, even taking aside streaming services. You've got your main commercial networks of 7, 10 and 9, but there's not a huge amount of quality drama on that. Why are a lot of these commercial networks so averse to drama? Is it purely the fact that reality TV is low cost to make, pulls in big viewer numbers, and therefore there's no need to do it? Or is there just a deeper aversion to drama?
It does come back to cost. We see the turning point around 2009 when the multi-channels arrived and the Australian audience split. And so all of those broadcasters all of a sudden had to finance the cost of programming on 3 or 4 channels. And no new advertising money came into the market, really. They just lost the advertising that used to be on the main channel. And sort of at that point, it became really expensive to try to produce drama relative to the size of an audience that drama attracts. And then, 10 years later, you have the streaming services coming in and really providing a better environment for drama in that audiences can stop and start and watch on demand.
You got to wonder the worth of having channels like Go and Gem and all these extra digital channels, because you're right, there's not a lot of it's just circulating no new content, just the same stuff over and over again. I wonder, can you provide any insight into why this is going off a little bit of track as to why there was such an explosion of these digital channels? Is it just purely taking up that broadcast real estate?
So in many other places in the world, cable television came in the 90s and gave viewers much more choice.
Yeah.
And Australia was just unusual in that it didn't adopt cable in large numbers. And so the rest of the world largely had this kind of fragmentation of the business back in the 90s, and it didn't hit Australia until the arrival of the digital multi-channels. And so, I think in terms of viewer taste and interest, people have responded that they actually like the channels, that viewing is now spread across them. The problem is in the business model.
And I'll tell you a personal anecdote. When Go, which is the Channel 9 subsidiary, first started, it was mind-blowing that Seinfeld would be on a free-to-air channel. Like previously, Seinfeld had always been a Foxtel, and now you're seeing these advertisements on Go, on normal TV, that Seinfeld would just be on whenever you clicked your remote, which was amazing. Let's delve back into what these regulations mean for the local filmmakers and just the national industry. How will the national industry click into these regulations? Will they benefit?
Perhaps. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There aren't rules yet. The government has said that they will act by mid-year to put up some sort of quota. The past government had said 5% at one point. The screen producers in the country have largely argued for the 20% number. So I think historically we see these kind of regulations working best when they underpin existing demand. Realistically, that 20% number is really high and would be surprising. And I think one of the big issues for Australian producers is simply creating a sustainable environment. Because as you noted before, there's a lot of uncertainty in the business model globally, and we're likely to see production coming out from everywhere contracting a bit because it was so overblown during COVID.
Mm.
And so this is not maybe the right time to be thinking expansion, because we're not clear how these services are ultimately going to make money in the long run if they're not going to be in every home, which looks like the case.
It is putting the cart before the horse a little bit. And you, to a degree, I'm not sure you can blame them. 5 years ago, these platforms, especially Netflix, seemed endless in their marketability and their ability to conquer people's viewing habits. One more question, which I'm very interested to hear. Comparatively, how does Australia weigh up in its regulation of streaming platforms? At the moment, there's very little. What about the rest of the world?
So Europe took the lead, which has traditionally been the approach. Europe has, especially because of the multiplicity of languages, they enacted rules quite early on. Since then, some particular European countries, specifically non-English language speaking ones like France and Italy and Germany, have been probably the most aggressive. Canada's in kind of the similar position to Australia. We're trying to figure out what makes sense in terms of wanting to be part of this boom in production, but also not just wanting to be a place for the U.S. industry to come and produce and to not make anything that's all that Australian. I think that's the trickiest part of getting this regulation right, is that it actually has a definition of Australian content that will make sure that the kinds of production that are done according to the quota are really Australian stories and not just American productions moved here and produced here.
Yes, totally, totally. And I guess also not reruns, not The Secret Life of Us over and over again, or stuff that's, as you say, by definition Australian, but it's just an American production moved in. Amanda, this is a fascinating chat, and it's interesting talking about television and broadcast, because it does play such a role in our lives, but we might not be quite aware of it. And it's interesting seeing the way the landscape is so shifting and so unstable, and the government's trying to, and the industry is trying to make some sort of sense from it and benefit a little bit from all the money that these platforms rake in.
Well, crucially, a lot of these platforms aren't actually making profit, right? So really only Netflix is profitable. So, you know, I think part of it is just sort of understanding the difference between market capitalization, which is investors, you know, throwing money at things and often losing their money, and whether or not, you know, these businesses have gotten to the point where they are sustainable and, you know, businesses that can mature. And I think we're at that point now. So we really just can't overestimate the extent to which this is just a whole new way of making movies and television shows and trying to profit from them. So it is tricky stuff, and it's difficult all the way around.
And thank you so much for making a bit of light of it. But as we say, it's confusing times in the old entertainment industry, but when hasn't it been, hey? Amanda, thank you so much for joining me on RTRFM.
My pleasure.